You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Some of the most iconic pictures of Yasser Arafat, Abu Ammar and his fighters were taken as he bid farewell to his people in the Palestinian refugee camps in Beirut before they left Beirut for the very last time in August 1982. Some of these pictures were captured by a journalist who used to work for PLO's magazine, Palestine al-Thawra, a young Syrian journalist, a young Syrian photographer, Fasih Kiso. Over the next four episodes, I'm going to take you in a journey into the life of Fasih Kiso, the journalist, the photographer, the artist, the traveler, the dreamer from Syria, who gave us some of the most iconic pictures of the Palestinian fighters before they left Beirut for the last time. Stay with me. Fasih, thank you for agreeing to be on my show on such a short notice.
A few minutes notice?
Yes.
That's a good one.
So maybe 7 minutes notice.
Yeah.
That's plenty of time.
I'm happy to be and try this with you.
First of all, have you been told that you are photogenic? So this radio interview is a waste. You should be on television. Have you been told you are photogenic?
Yeah, actually, do you know, sometimes in Melbourne, I walk in the street and I see people, can you take a photo of you?
See, it could be the hair, it could be the glasses that stand out. So Fasih, how long have you been in Australia for?
Well, I came November 1992. Yeah.
So I've been here for around three decades and more, maybe 35 years nearly.
Yes.
And you came to Australia from?
I was living in Beirut, in Lebanon.
So, Fasih, you are originally from Syria, but also you have very strong connection to Lebanon.
Yeah, I was born in Syria, northeast Syria. When I had my year 12, I moved to Beirut to study there.
You were born in the Syrian city of Hasakeh.
Yes.
Which is the northeast part of Syria.
Yeah.
What we know about Hasakeh is that it is not one of the major cities in Syria. It is known, but when we count the major cities in Syria, we go to Damascus for the capital city.
Yeah,
we go to Halab, Aleppo.
Yeah.
Maybe after Aleppo, Homs and Hama. Maybe Latakia, and maybe then comes Hasakeh.
Yeah, the people who lives in northeast Syria, including Al-Hasakeh, there's other cities, province of Al-Hasakeh. They didn't feel actually they are part of Syria because they are marginalized politically, economically. Even though that most of the wheats, most of petrols, most of cottons.
So most of the natural resources for Syria come from that region, but nevertheless, they feel marginalized.
Yeah,
is this a feeling or it is a reality?
It's a reality, until now.
So. I want to start from your maybe childhood, the time where you first went to school in Hasakeh. What can you share with us about your childhood?
Well, when I was a kid, actually, I went my first 3 years or 4 years of study. It was in a village, a small village.
What is it called?
It's called Seger. Seger. There was like middle Seger, above Seger, the bottom Seger, something
like
this.
How do they say it? Like Seger al-Ulya, Foka, or Tahta?
Seger Tahtani, Seger Fokani, Seger Nassani.
Okay. Because in Palestine, we also have upper and lower. Yani Beit Urit Foka, Beit Urit Tahta.
We
use Foka or Tahta for upper and lower.
A small village. It was 11 houses.
That's very small.
Mud houses, what they call them? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the school, it was at the beginning of the village, just one room. And the student from year 1 to 6, they are at the same room on the, yeah, and one teacher. Yeah.
So the whole school is one classroom?
One classroom.
Yeah. And do you recall the number of boys in that classroom?
Well, boys and girls. Actually.
Boys and girls, yeah, or number of children.
Yeah, it was mixed. Maybe around maybe 30.
Here you're talking about maybe time in 60s, you went to school.
60s, yes.
And the dialect of the people of Hasake, it's closer to Iraq than it is to Syria.
Actually, the dialect of the village where I was born, it's closer, a lots of Turkish word. Mm. They used of Merdin. The people of Merdin, they talk Arabic, but lots of Turkish words. Mm. Yeah.
This is a mixed group. So you have Arabs, Kurds, Syriac. You have also other groups. So personally, which one of the groups where your family is from?
Okay, I'll tell you something. This village where I was born, they were all Syriac. Mm. The village next to us, maybe you walk only 10-15 minutes, they are all Arab and they have dark skins. The other village you walk more, maybe around 15 to 20 minutes, Kurdish.
Okay. Yeah. So within the same proximity, you have a village of Syriac, Syrian, yani we call it in Arabic Syrian, and also next door neighbor are Arabs.
Yeah.
Different looking, maybe darker skin.
Darker skin.
The next door neighbor on the other side, Kurds.
Kurds, yeah. So we visit each other. People come and mix and so it's, but no one was talking about like those people are Kurdish or that's Arab.
Didn't matter.
No.
But at home, what language did your parents speak?
Arabic. Arabic, but as I said, a lots of words from Merdin or like south of Merdin. Mm. Because my father was born in South Merdin, one of the villages in South Merdin.
I was going to ask about the origin of your family. So you are Syriac, which means that you came to this village maybe a generation or two generations before you were born?
It's a new village, but I'm not really sure. I know that it's the people who were living at that village, they built their houses.
Okay.
So they established the so after the 1915 massacres, those people there, right, some, for example, my grandfather killed during that massacre.
So your grandfather to your father or mother's side?
My father. Yeah, my grandfather's side, killed, and my grandmother also killed during the massacres. And one of my uncles, he was a little boy. Mm. All those people, they were living here in this village. They all, their parents or like whatever, and sister, they were living in what called Turkey now. Mm. Yeah.
So here for context, you're talking about events that happened towards the end of World War One, where there were massacres against the different groups in the region, in what we call today Turkey, and the Armenian genocide, and also the Syriac.
The same
time.
They call it Syriac Seyfo.
Seyfo.
But it's the same. That during them, also there was Greek also living in Turkey, and they were.
And that's when your great grandparents came to Syria as or expelled from home.
Well, my father. Mm. His sister was 10 years old, and he was maybe around 3 years old. His sister was carrying him with a smaller sister. Mm. The smaller sister, maybe 8 or 7 years, died in the road coming. Mm. So my auntie and my father stayed alive. Mm. And so other people from the community, they were looking after them.
In your upbringing, here you're talking about a family that grew on the stories of trauma. Was that spoken about at home, or it was ignored, or it was invisible? Did you recall the first time you discovered your family's history?
Actually, no one was talking about this at all. We didn't really hear about any stories. But after I grew up, after I went to Lebanon or something, I started to listen to stories such like this, and I was investigating this. And I feel really very sorry about, I'm a filmmaker and I record images and I interview people. But I did not thought about like talking
your
with
own,
my
yeah.
father. Mm. And
do you feel guilty for waiting maybe that long to start unpacking this chapter of your family history?
Well, I don't really feel guilty, but I feel like I should have talked to my father about this. But I talked with my uncle, one of my uncles. He was older than my father. And I've got all this information. And also my older sister, I interviewed her, but recently, maybe 10 years ago only, about
and
these things.
Was it difficult for her to speak about the trauma or that chapter?
No, they were talking like about the film fiction or something, a story. Mm. Just like, oh, your father like this and sister like that, and story. It's not really. It becomes strange that all this trauma, it becomes in the past.
From your mother's side, was she also Syriac?
Yeah.
So how far is your village from the town, from Hasake?
But there is two, it's in the middle of two cities. One called Derbasiya, which is on the border exactly of Turkey.
Mm.
And around maybe 40 kilometers, the village far from Derbasiya. And the same distance from Hasake, like around 40, 45 kilometers from the city of Hasake.
So growing up now here in the elementary time, it was mainly in the village and maybe visiting Hasake.
Yeah.
When was the very first time you visited Damascus?
Well, very first time, I was maybe around 17, 16 years old. Yeah. In Damascus.
What was the purpose? Did you just want to see it, or there was
just
a reason?
I have someone from Al-Hasake, brother of one of my friend, and he was living there. And he said, come and meet me there.
So was Damascus the first big city, or you also had the chance to see Homs or Hama before
actually
then?
Actually, the first big city I saw, it was Aleppo, because Aleppo, it was closer. And the distance by bus at that time, it was around maybe 10 hours by bus, old buses. We call it hop hop. Amazing things about these buses, they put, and we travel at night because we don't want, like, we want, if you spend all the day traveling.
So you take the long night trip.
Long night trip.
Do you sleep during that?
Okay. Yeah, I was very famous until recently. Whenever I got into a bus, I sleep directly.
Seriously?
All my
You're
sister
lucky.
And brother, they talk about, you are very lucky. As soon as you get into the bus, you sleep.
And in the bus, did they used to put maybe some music
or that's it.
And nevertheless, you just fall asleep.
So, Kulthum, not any other singers, Kulthum only. You don't listen to any like short songs or something.
Yeah, long.
It has to be long and repeated.
Over and over
it's
again.
Amazing, yeah. You know, Kulthum, she repeats that sentence and then they repeat the songs.
And then they repeat the cassette.
Yes. Yeah.
And there is a little bit of stereotype in the Middle East and in the Arab countries where they say Kulthum is for night and Fairuz in daytime or morning.
Yeah, morning.
Yes.
All people actually... In maybe in Syria and Lebanon, of course, because I live in Lebanon. In the morning, you should put Fairuz.
Fairuz, it's like by law.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
have
yeah,
to listen to Fairuz.
Compulsory.
Compulsory.
But, and for example, there is we live in the center of the. My father bought land, an old house in the center of the Hasake, and then rebuilt the house there. Mm. It was Arabic house from mud or something, so he rebuilt it. So under the ground level, it's all shops, and most of the shops, or one famous is Taylor, always he opened the door at 7:30 and Fairuz.
So you hear
loud Fairuz.
So the whole neighborhood. Well, on this note, let's share the beauty of the voice of Fairuz with my listeners, and let's play one of her songs. So you're listening to Palestine Remembered on 855 AM and an interview with Fasih Kiso. And let's listen to Fairuz.
Hi, this is Rafif Ziada, and you're listening to 3CR, Pro-Palestinian, Happily Proud Radio.
Welcome again, dear listeners. We are talking to Fasih Kiso. So you finished year 12, and as a year 12 or high school student, what was your dream?
It was actually funny. My dream was completely different than what I do now. Yeah, and we moved actually after when I was at year four. We moved to Al Hasaka, the city of Hasaka, the center of. We were living in the center, as I said. And the school, it was exactly from our balcony. You can see the school where I go, the student playing in the playground, and when and then I study in different like high school and. When I finished my year 12, I was dreaming to travel, to go out of Syria. So my dream was, at that time, strange. I started to learn Turkish, and I wanted to go and study medicine in Turkey, in Istanbul. I was dreaming of Istanbul. I don't know why. And then this dream finished by going to Beirut.
So before your dream took a turn from Turkey / Istanbul to Lebanon, I want to stay in Syria and ask you about your life as a teenager, as a young man, towards the end of your high school life in Syria, in maybe late 60s, early 70s. It was also a military society, militarized society. How did it feel?
Well, for me, okay, we have something it called Futuwe.
Futuwe.
Which is like military, what do you call it? Military what? Exercises? Military
training.
Information. When we are at high school, year 11 and 12. It starts from year, I think, 10, year 11 and 12.
And even the school uniform was also military uniform.
And we were wearing like the color of the...
military uniform.
Yeah, military uniform. Yeah, so I remember when I was at year 11 or 12, we went to to experience how to use the gun, Kalashnikov. So on the ground, everyone, and okay, you have to point on that target. Yeah, it's a sign. Yeah. So, but we have to wait for the leader to say, fire!
Yes.
So, my hand, my finger was on the trigger, and the bullet...
Seriously, before the sign?
Before the sign. Who is that? And I had like some like punishing like on my bag. Don't do that. So, yeah, so it was... but we didn't feel really we are militarized. Yeah, so we feel like it's just part of the study. Yeah, it's just any subject. It's just another subject. Yeah. But for me, it wasn't like this. For me, I was like, you know, Beatles at that time. It was very famous as well, like Fairuz for us as a young people. So we were growing our hair really long and Charleston. And it was very fashionable. When I look at my photos now in the 60s, late 60s.
Very fashionably elegant.
Fashionable, like we were in England.
Yes.
Charleston, whistling to the Beatles. And the funny thing is, we have, there is also a movie, a cinema close to us. So they were putting the before, like half an hour, the film starts, they put... also loud on sound on the Beatles.
Really?
Every day, the Beatles.
So you go to the cinema to watch an Arabic movie, but before the movie begins, they put half an hour of the
music
Beatles?
Music and the Beatles.
Serious?
Always. And until now, I listen to those songs.
All right.
Now, since that time. So I knew the Beatles through this
Syrian
man
cinemas.
Who, Yeah, I was playing the Beatles in speakers.
And in your upbringing, you were aware that, you know, there is a conflict. You were aware that also there is war. There is part, you know, you're part of a bigger regional conflict. And it didn't feel strange. It was just part of life.
Okay, I'll tell you why. Maybe the main reason is, as I said, the city of Al-Hasakeh or province, Al-Hasakeh province, it was marginalized. So politically, somehow, and militarily, we were far from all this. Mm. So but I think the people who lives in Damascus or Suwaida, or they were really affected more. Mm. Of course, there was 67 wars and 73 wars.
So you finished year 12, and then you decided to study in another country. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I always wanted to go out of Al-Hasakeh.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and we had, at the beginning of the 60s, there was a few families from Al-Hasakeh, which they are Christian mainly. They went to live and work in Beirut, in Lebanon. Lots of people, like Christian, they moved to Lebanon in the 60s. And some of, part of my far family, they moved also there. So, and they were working in Beirut. Everyone knows. We don't really know actually about Damascus that much. We know about Beirut because the connection was from Hasakeh to Beirut.
Hmm. Yeah. For family connections.
Family connection. Hmm. So, and everyone, where are you coming? Ah, Beirut. Ah, where coming
and
from?
They come
Beirut.
Back with stories.
And they come with the story. Yeah, and okay. Lots of people that I know that now they live in Beirut. So I went to Beirut.
What was the story they brought? They told about Beirut? As in any good or bad?
No, very good.
In what
because
way?
That's I'm talking now about the beginning of the 70s.
So it
Beirut.
Was it was
Beirut.
Like advanced and modernized.
Beirut. So Beirut now Beirut the 70s. It was the Paris al-Sharq.
The Paris of the East.
The East, yeah, and it was fantastic when I went to Beirut. So it was, I think, 73, 74, yeah. It was amazing life, amazing. Everything is different. Like you go from Hasakeh to Beirut.
That's a big cultural
big
shock.
Cultural shock. Not shock, actually. Yeah,
but it's
different.
Just big difference.
Yeah, very, very big difference. Yeah. So I learned how to put wallpaper because most of my relatives, they were working in this industry, the wallpaper and the carpet.
It used to be very...
Yeah.
Fashionable.
In the 70s,
So you started working in wallpaper sector in Beirut?
Yeah.
As you were a university student or before?
No, that's why I started to like art and interior design. So this, the connection with the interior designer that I had before when I moved to Beirut made me think more about study something related to this, to the interior design. Even though I remember when I was at the school, high school, when we have homework, I was making my homework, but it's really designed. And also in Al-Hasakeh, I have this basement. And the basement, I was putting color it and something. So I had this direction about colors and art and design, but I did not know the truth. There is something called interior design.
So you're actually doing it without knowing the name of that.
I was
that.
Doing it without the name. And also I was doing some kind of posters, like cutting, for example. We were into Al-Hasakeh, it was really famous, or my relative, most of my relatives, they were communist. And we were always, as a young, high school or student or something, we go during the summer, participate in a group picnic supporting the left side.
So the progressive, the left leaning.
Yeah. Mm. So, and yeah, so it, the life in Al-Hasakah, it was more about left, not right wings.
So it was, here you're talking about maybe socialists or left-leaning Marxists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As opposed to nationalism or Ba'ath or...
No Ba'ath, communism.
Communism.
We did not really... Ba'ath exists, but my side or my community...
More left-leaning.
It was left. So and was even, the, yeah, even the, though I had some friends, they are from the Ba'ath party, but the most relatives, most close friends, they were communists.
Fasih, we've come to the end of this episode, but we still haven't spoken about the important chapter of Beirut and studying there and living there. So until we meet next week, we will continue the story with Fasih. Thank you for being with us on Palestine Remembered. And next week, it's going to be part two with Fasih Kiso. This is Yusuf Ahmed Rimawi wishing you the best of time and salam.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.